I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ray. Welcome to the Evangelical Dark Web. Today, we're going to be discussing some Southern Baptist news. Bruce Frank is running for Southern Baptist president, and he could be the next J.D. Greer. And that is quite the comparison, because Bruce Frank is a North Carolina multi-campus mega church pastor who is also extremely woke. This is like the next J.D. Greer. So if he wins, you're definitely going to see that he is yet another candidate vying for the liberal voting bloc in the Southern Baptist Convention. He would be the liberals' third option to vote for in Indianapolis in June. So we got five candidates so far. Two of them are Orthodox. Three of them are liberal, which the more liberal candidates, the better, because we want to split that vote so that the two conservatives make it to the runoff. So this is good news all around, unless he wins. Then it's a terrible day for the Southern Baptist Convention. But they need some W's in the Southern Baptist Convention. But we're going to expose Bruce Frank right here. We're going to be the first to do it because he has just announced and it's time for some vetting. But first, I want to let you know, Evangelical Dark Web is a Christian news gathering and commentary ministry. There are a lot of commentary, Christian commentary ministries out there. Not a lot of good news gatherers out there. We are doing the groundwork in vetting these candidates for Southern Baptist president. This is the first video or podcast I've done on this election cycle, but it won't be the last. I have written articles about each of the other four candidates' entries into this race, but Bruce Frank is the wokest, perhaps. I mean, it's tight between him and Mike Chiabone, but like I said, this is our Patreon-like system. You can support us over at evangelicaldarkweb.org/join, and if you were subscribed to the newsletter, you would have gotten all the updates on the race so far, which is why you want to be on that, because there's more articles than videos or podcast episodes. But the least you can do is drop that like and smash that subscribe button if you are new. So we got a lot of clips that we're going to listen to today. But first, let's just give an introduction further into who Bruce Frank is. He is the pastor of Biltmore Church. I don't know why it's called Biltmore Church. It was not always called, I don't think it was always called Biltmore Church. But Bruce Frank joined in 2008. And ever since he's been a part of the church, he has been franchising it into a multi-campus megachurch model. This was not always a megachurch. Bruce Frank has certainly made it a megachurch. And that shows on the church's history page. It is a Southern Baptist church by confession in their faith statement. So they technically have an Orthodox faith statement. And then this is his nomination, which I think we're going to get to towards the end now that we've kind of introduced who he is. Let's just go through some woke preacher clips to kind of really understand who he is. The first clips are going to come from about 6 years ago. He gave this in like 2018, and he went pretty woke. I'm going to give you the clips in chronological order of how they appear in the sermon. But clip one is basically about Jesus isn't really white, so let's watch.
We also know some other facts. We know that he was an ethnic minority Jewish man. We know that ethnic minority Jewish men typically had brown skin. They had not long flowing black hair. They typically had dark hair, shorter than that. Or to put it the way one guy put it, he said, finding a white guy in Galilee in the first century would be like finding Sasquatch riding a unicorn across a rainbow, okay? It's not going to happen, okay? You're not going to find that description, that Jesus is not walking around Galilee in the first century. You're like, wow, what's the big deal?
So the context of that is he shows a picture of Jesus, which honestly is not that white or European, in my opinion, but maybe it's just the camera and how well you can see the picture in the sermon video. And he's like, this isn't really what Jesus looked like. And he wants to make a giant virtue signal about that. I'm sure you saw the hashtag at the bottom of the screen because they're really trying to be provocative. This is the most popular video on his YouTube channel for the Biltmore Church and their YouTube channel. It's the most popular sermon on there. And this is the type of message that he's preaching. Also, what he just said was patently absurd. Like, the Jews would not have been an ethnic minority in Galilee. And it also would have been feasible and conceivable to have found a white person in Galilee. Like, this is just asinine logic that he's using. But there's a lot more where that came from. Here's clip number two.
There's 12 guys. They're in a place that, I mean, they're in a hood they have never been a part of at all. And they're like walking, like, what is happening here? What is going to happen to us? It's like they have to go. He's like, you all go. And it's not about the food. When they get back with the food, we don't have time to look at it. Jesus doesn't even eat the food. Why? Because it was not about the errand. It was about the disciples. Jesus wanted to forcefully make them go into an uncomfortable, awkward situation so that all that stereotypical racism that they had toward the Samaritans would begin to go away. And we're going to look in the book of Acts in a little while, and big time, it did.
So, again, that is some bad teaching there because that's not in the text. It is not in the text that Jesus sent them into the marketplace to teach them a lesson about racism. He forced that into the text. It is simply not in the text. So that is clip number two. And here is clip number three.
MLK years ago that said, still the most segregated hour in America is 11 to 12 o'clock on Sunday. 5.5% of churches in America could be termed multicultural. 5.5, that's not 55%, that's 5% of churches in America could be termed multicultural. And what they basically call multicultural church is a church that doesn't have more than 80% of their attendance from one race. Now, for full disclosure, we are not there yet. We are not there yet. We are in the right trajectory. 5 years ago, we had like 99% Caucasian. 99%. That's true, about 99. Now it's probably somewhere in the, you know, I don't know, 80 to 85. We've at least caught up with our community, for Pete's sake. We've at least caught up with our community. We don't want to just say, hey, we want to be just like our community. We're the church of Jesus Christ. Should not we be more diverse than the society and the culture which God has sovereignly placed us to minister in? We should be able to be that. And so here's what I want to say. You're like,
so there he is, and this was definitely the wokest clip in that sermon. And he is lecturing his church about how they need to be less white. And if I'm a white person at his church, because I am a white person, it's like, okay, you want to be less white? I'm going to leave. You can be less white that way, because that's what he's telling his congregation. It's too white. We need to be more diverse in our community around us. It's not enough to just simply match the demographics of that community. They need to be more diverse. And it's just a pathetic statistics that he was citing about, you know, how many churches are, you know, mono-ethnic, as though that's a bad thing, because not everywhere in the country is multi-ethnic. Most places, and I'm just speaking landmass, geographically speaking, are completely white. Most states or most swaths of land are completely white in terms of like the multi-ethnic definition. A church couldn't be that in that community because of the demographics in that community. So that's pretty much the case with most of the land in the United States. And it's just a pathetic mandate that he's placing on the church that is not found in scripture. And this was one of the woke talking points at that time. It wasn't, you know, George Floyd, the saint who was martyred on the streets of Minneapolis. It was, we need to be multi-ethnic. We need to be more diverse in our community. And it's just woke. He's basically saying, my church is too white. I want to be the cool, hip pastor that Lecrae talks to. And, you know, he's citing MLK like he just died a few years ago or something, even though it's been like, you know, not just a few decades, but more, you know, several decades ago. But I digress about that point. Point four has to do with him citing Marcus Hayes. This is a pretty interesting name drop that he gives. It is not the only name drop that he gives in this sermon. He also name drops J.D. Greer. And that's pretty telling because the comparison that I'm making here is he is J.D. Greer 2.0. Ed Litton was J.D. Greer 1.1, if you're a software guy, you get that. 1.1, because he's not a 2.0, he's just a cheap copy. I wouldn't even call him an upgrade. But this guy is J.D. Greer 2.0 because his physiognomy is a little better than J.D. Greer. But he's just as woke. So here is clip number four.
Now, Marcus and I have had tons of talks way before this little interview. The one that finally, like, probably 2 years ago, when he said the phrase that was in there, he's like, you know what? He's like, Bruce, what really starts to hit home is, like, when I see these hashtags and it's like hashtag in the person's name, he said, yeah, I honestly think that one day that could be hashtag Marcus Hayes. And it dawned on me, I have never thought that about myself. I've never seen one of those incidents and said, I have never thought hashtag Bruce Frank. But he's like, I have thought about that. Why? Because I came from somewhere different than where he is. So for me, it's not the words. Before you do your words, why don't you weep with them?
So there is more emotional manipulation, which is the broader context of the point that he's making. He's trying to do the weep with those who weep, mourn with those who mourn, to kind of guilt white people into taking woke positions. And again, it's tiring, it's bored. You know, this is 2024 now, so, you know, we've kind of seen past that. We see through that nonsense. But nonetheless, in 2018, I guess, that was a lot fresher on the mind. So that's kind of what he was doing, and he's weaponizing the concept of empathy, which, by the way, is not a biblical command. The Bible says that Jesus sympathized with our weakness. Jesus sympathizes with us. He does not empathize with us, because empathy is actually less biblical than sympathy, by the way. But, you know, a lot of these super emotional types aren't into that truth. But nonetheless, he's name-dropping Marcus Hayes, who is the guy who is too woke for FBC Naples in Florida. They made the documentary or mini-documentary about that church that was being forced by the Southern Baptist Convention to hire Marcus Hayes. This guy was a woke pastor. He failed the question about, you know, homosexuality. He failed that question entirely. And that was one of the reasons he did not get the threshold to be, I don't want to say ordained, but hired as the pastor of that church. He failed the threshold because he was too woke. He was woke on the, you know, the racial issue. He's basically a Democrat. And then he's also woke on sexuality as well. And they found that out. They banded together and said, we're not going to have this guy be our pastor. And what happened to those people? They were labeled racist by the Southern Baptist Convention, by their own church. They were basically kicked out of their own church for that because of Marcus Hayes. Now, Marcus Hayes had at least a decency not to do a round two of that vote after the people were kicked out. He just went somewhere else to be a mega church pastor. Because there's a lot of mega churches that want the cool black pastor that is Marcus Hayes. But it just shows this guy is very well connected. He is the J.D. Greer 2.0, very well connected, which leads me to believe that he might be the North American Mission Board candidate in this race, because people like Clint Pressley and Mike Keabone are not working out too well. So that is my analysis on that so far. Here's clip five. This is a different sermon. This is from late 2023, October 2023 to be specific. It is about him addressing transgenderism. And what's key here is what he presents as two worldly responses, and what he says is going to be. So he says that these are two worldly responses. So listen to this.
The world basically gives you, as a parent or grandparent, two options. The two options are basically affirmation or alienation. I'm going to say that there's a different way. There's a Jesus way that is neither affirmation. It's neither affirmation like, oh, yeah, well, just whatever you want to do. We have a God that actually designed things, and he designed it in such a way as for human flourishing. But it's also not alienation. Oftentimes, if you say, you know what, I don't feel that's the best, and I actually have some truth and facts and stuff to back that up, you will be called everything from transphobia or transphobic to, you know, being actually responsible if something tragic happens in the life of your daughter or granddaughter or whatever it is. If you're a grandparent, what are you going to do when little Johnny brings home a gender wheel? What are you going to do there? Yeah, the gender, if you think I'm joking, that's actually not a joke. It's kind of like pin the tail on the donkey. It used to be a long, long time ago. A gender wheel is what it sounds like. Is you got a wheel and you got an arrow and you flip the arrow, and wherever it stops, that's the gender you can pick. So number three, it's a personal issue. It can be it's a missional issue for sure. But listen, it's a discipleship issue. It is a discipleship issue. If you're like, I'm a disciple of Jesus, I'm an apprentice of Jesus. As I said before, when you surrender to the Lordship of Christ, we lay down the way we do money. We lay down the way we do family, the way we do forgiveness, the way we do sex, the way we do identity. And the rest of your life, there's going to be a conflict. No matter what culture you go into, there's not a culture you can walk into where you do not have this conflict. And the conflict you have to navigate all the time, if you're a Christ follower, is between what the world says and what the Word says. The Word is going to say, this is the way we do sex. This is the way we do money. This is the way we do generosity. This is the way we do marriage. This is the way we do forgiveness. The world, on the other hand, is saying, no. This is the way we do money. This is the way we do sex. This is the way we do identity. This is the way we do forgiveness. And if you're a disciple, then what you've got to ask is, okay, what is the Word's way and what is the world's way? And my job is to help move you along that discipleship continuum in our 73, 74 minutes on Sundays, as well as the rest of the stuff during the week. So
what's key to pick up here is that in the beginning of this clip, he talked about, you know, there's a third way between affirmation and alienation, but alienation is not an unbiblical response. We talked about this at large with the whole Alistair Begg situation, where Alistair Begg was encouraging a grandmother to attend a gay wedding. That was sinful, wicked counsel by Alistair Begg, and it was a sin. Alistair Begg clearly sinned there because he, you know, promoted affirmation instead of alienation. Yes, when you do certain types of sin, that should alienate you from your family. That is the most biblical response to this type of issue. When Bruce Jenner wanted to, you know, dress up as a woman, he should have been alienated from his family. That is what should have happened there. And too many people do not have the courage to follow more biblical examples that show this. The father did not chase after the prodigal son. That's just a New Testament example, but there's Old Testament examples as well, such as, you know, David with Absalom. You know, there's a cutoff relationship there because of what he did. And this is before the rebellion, by the way. So there's an article about that over at Evangelical Dark Web about this precedent. But in any case, the Bible's pretty clear that certain sins should cut you off and result in worldly isolation. And we have lost that. We have lost that. So the fact is, he wanted to paint a false dichotomy and, you know, talk about this is the third way. And we've heard a lot of third wayism over the years. And that sermon wasn't, you know, like, that was probably one of the worst parts of that sermon. But the rest of the sermon is empty calories. It, you know, you're doing a sermon on this topic and you don't really go anywhere with it. It was empty calories. It left a lot to be desired. He talked a very long time and said very little that was meaningful, which is kind of par for the course for this megachurch, multi-campus franchiser pastor. So this is our last clip, and it brings a chuckle to me. This is also from October-ish 2023, and it's where he tries to say that he's not woke. And we're going to talk about this clip going into what his platform is at for the Southern Baptist presidency.
Afraid. Some of you are like, oh, you just want to be a, you want to be afraid. I found this interesting is sometime during the task force with the denominational sex abuse deal, there were some guys that called me woke. I was sitting there, my boys actually, they're like, Dad, you've been called a lot of names. That is never, it's like you drive a truck, you potentially have some armament in your vehicle, you are right, you, all this stuff. And I thought, you know what, you're right. But because we don't want to avoid, we got to have some biblical backbone. Just looking back, we as a church, we've addressed racism, we've addressed abortion, we've addressed adultery, sexuality, gender, poverty, all that kind of stuff. And it's important because our job is to disciple you to think with a biblical worldview. But we got to understand that our primary call as a church is to make disciples of Jesus. We share the gospel, we show the gospel. Now we preach the gospel, we share it unapologetically. We're a Bible, if you're new here, we believe, we're like front to back, we believe this book. We're gonna preach this book. Theologically, we're very conservative. Theologically, we're very conservative.
So there you have it. He says he's theologically very conservative. And, you know, he talks about how he's preached on all these different issues. And that's in the broader context. He talks about how he's preached on all these issues. And I showed you the context of which he's preached on racism and transgenderism. I've yet to see a sermon title on the sexuality issue. But if that comes up, I'll do a separate video on that because I love exposing people on that. But let's talk about his platform for Southern Baptist president. So there's a focus on the Great Commission. And again, I just feel like it's entirely ironic for a multi-campus megachurch pastor to talk about, you know, church planting, which is basically his plank one and plank four, are just super ironic for this reason. He's talking about international missions for the most part here, which is just very easy. You know, no one's really disputing it. It's a truism to kind of make an emphasis on international missions one of your things. I just, again, find it very ironic that, you know, the multi-campus megachurch pastor is doing it. So he says, number two, a tenacity with sexual abuse reform. Now, again, we've covered at length that this was a fake scandal in the Southern Baptist Convention, that there actually isn't a prevalence of sexual abuse in the Southern Baptist Convention. So much so that when they did the task force, that Bruce Frank was a part of the task force. You heard him reference that in the clip. He was a part of the task force that found that the Southern Baptist Convention did not actually cover up sexual abuse allegations at the convention level. They did not find that at all. They did not find any instances where there was an actual cover-up. What they found was that there was a list of Google News alerts that someone compiled that anyone who did a background check could have found on their own. They didn't need that list to be circulated because they should have done a background check already that would have found that. So a public domain list was the cover-up. And then, you know, Johnny Hunt, who wasn't actually accused of sexual abuse, and then circling the wagons for Jennifer Lyell, who was an adulterous woman. That is what the sexual abuse task force focused on. And it's Me Too in the church. It's all about Rachel Denhollander and her theology and importing that Me Too egalitarianism into the church. And that needs to be fought. And the Southern Baptist Convention was scammed. And they need to reject this guy because he represents that scam. Number three, a renewed commitment to an uncompromising cooperative complementarianism. So this is basically him saying that he supports female pastors in the Southern Baptist Convention. And he says, I think the good work done by Adrian Rogers and the Baptist Faith and Message 2000 committee is sufficient and practiced in well over 99% of SBC churches. Southern Baptists are clear about their complementarian convictions and must remain so. But we don't need to take measures which do more to divide than guide. We can ensure to affirm complementarianism without restructuring the basis of our cooperation. So this is him saying he opposes the Mike Law Amendment, which would make it so that you can get kicked out of the Southern Baptist Convention for being an egalitarian church, which is outside of the Baptist faith and message. It adds an amendment to the SBC Constitution that labels this non-cooperation. And that's why he's emphasizing cooperative complementarianism, because he's trying to expand the definitions of what it means to be complementarian. So clearly these are all weasel words, because he's not being upfront that he opposes the Mike Law Amendment, which is very clear in Plank 3, but he just doesn't have the balls to say that he opposes the Mike Law Amendment. And he's going to probably support whatever the Cooperation Task Force, which is really woke, by the way, is going to come out with. And then he says, number four, an emphasis on church revitalization. Again, this is the megachurch, multi-campus megachurch pastor who's going to lecture the rest of the convention on how to be a pastor. Because it talks about become vibrant again through coaching and resources for pastors. This guy who can't even, you know, let his yes be yes and his no be no, does a whole sermon on transgenderism, but says very little of substance or meaning or value. Does another sermon, which was the woke, where the woke clip came from, which is on the church and politics, and says very little of meaning or substance or value. And then goes super woke, is going to be coaching and the face of the Southern Baptist Convention and this initiative to coach Southern Baptist pastors. This is an absolute joke. And the good news is, he will hopefully split the liberal voting bloc in the Southern Baptist Convention. The bad news is there's a chance he wins that liberal voting bloc in the Southern Baptist Convention, because it's a race between him and Mike Keobone as to who's the worst candidate, as both of them seem to oppose the Mike Law Amendment. And then Clint Presley seems to have a lot of Big Eva credentials in there. But the based candidate, most base candidate, is Jared Moore, and I want him to win this race. So we're going to be covering the Southern Baptist Convention. We're going to be live streaming the Southern Baptist Convention again, and we'll hope to catch you then. Stay based, Christ is King, and we will catch you on the next one.